Hello and welcome everyone to today's Member Prospect Call. Today we have Judy McNary and Penny Marchand, two very experienced members of ACA. And I'm going to let them talk about why they joined ACA and why they stay. Judy, would you like to start first?
Sure. I have a financial planning firm in Broomfield, Colorado. I joined ACA in 07 and went through training in 07 and kind of started my business in kind of November, December of 07. So I've been at it about 3 years now. Before that, I was in the software industry. I had a couple software companies. And actually, right before I joined, I had decided to change careers and go back and get a master's in financial planning. And so then I graduated with the master's degree and wanted to find a fee-only business model because I'd had some bad experiences with financial advisors. And so that's how I learned about ACA. I was at NAPFA and met some ACA members and really liked the idea. And so I've been at it for 3 years and it's gone really well. Some of the things, let's see, you asked why I stay. For the first year, the training and the support was really terrific. It's a very welcoming community and there's a lot of really bright people with expertise in all different areas. So anytime anyone has a question about something, someone else might have the answer based on some prior experience they've had. For example, early on I had a prospective client who had closed-end funds, and I didn't really know, I mean, I knew what they were, but I didn't know how they might fit into what we wanted to do, and I put a post on the intranet, and turns out someone else who's a member used to be the CFO at a closed-end fund company and said, just give me a call and I'll explain it to you. And he walked me through about an hour's worth of just explaining all the ins and outs of them and what to look for and how to evaluate them. And that's the kind of experience I think that's pretty typical within the organization. My business, I have a my intent was to have a small firm. I work out of my house, and I like that. I don't really have plans to build a big firm, so I use virtual assistants to help with a lot of the admin and everything. But this year, I think by the end of 11, I will have as many clients as I can handle. So I'm just about there. I'm only really looking to add a few more clients this year. But it's gone well. That was a little bit faster than I had anticipated. And I think a lot of it is because I've taken advantage of a lot that the organization has to offer in terms of asking when I need help and getting other people to push me along when I go sideways and all those kinds of things. So that's my 2 cents for it. Penny?
Thank you, Judy. And next we have Penny Marchand.
I actually kind of came at this through the back door. I started working for Cambridge Connection, which is the mothership that started the whole thing, in 1993. My background had been in the brokerage business, and I met somebody, actually Kathy Stegmeier, who's our executive director, who told me about fee only, and I thought, now that makes a lot of sense, because I was having problems with the conflict of interest that was in the brokerage business. So I started working for Cambridge Connection, and then in 1996, my husband got quite ill and we moved. And in the next couple of years, I worked for other fee-based planners, people trying to be fee-only, and I realized how good I had it at Cambridge because the wheel was already invented, and these other companies were always trying to come up with processes and systems, and they didn't have the camaraderie. Now, we didn't have the alliance then. This was just the company of Cambridge Connection, but the processes, the tools that the alliance uses now were basically the same things we had then. I then went out on my own because I realized that fee-based and fee-only were very different, and I really wanted to stick with the fee-only model. And again, we didn't have the alliance then, and I was like, boy, I sure wish that I, had those tools, had that camaraderie. So then, in 1998, I came back to Tucson and came back to work with Burt Whitehead and Cambridge Connection. I managed the Tucson office, and by then the alliance had been underway, and there was processes. And then in 2000, I bought out my own practice. I essentially bought out the Tucson practice. I have had several advisors working for me down to now, where I just have me, someone who does wealth management, and two admin. I cannot even think about doing my practice without being a part of Cambridge. There are times when I get the bill and I go, do I really need it? And it's a pretty quick yes. I know the systems now, but I need, like Judy said, I think one of the key pieces that maybe we don't talk about enough is the camaraderie. If I have a tax question, there are just tax geniuses that are part of Cambridge. If I have an insurance question, there's people who really know this stuff in and out. I was really trying to figure out a new software to use earlier this year. I didn't know whether to use MoneyGuide Pro or Morningstar Office. There was so much help, and people would take the time to go through with me what they were using, and I can't tell you how much I appreciated that, and it really enabled me to make a good decision. I do still use the tools. I'd say the tools and the camaraderie are the two big pieces. And I think the philosophy, I've worked with an awful lot of other planners, and I believe the way Cambridge does it. I believe it removes it. Conflict of interest. I believe in the retainer model. I like the way we do it. In my opinion, the way Cambridge does it, particularly now in the marketplace where people are becoming a little more savvy, I think when they find out the way that we do it, which is based on a retainer model, we're not selling anything, and it's that holistic approach. People love that. It's a pretty easy close in terms of getting clients, and they get it, they like it, they appreciate it. It completely works for me. I very much believe in the philosophy behind it, and I think that we tend to attract nice people. I know that sounds maybe a little naive, but it's true. You come to a conference or something of ours, and we just have the nicest people. We're not used car salesmen, and we really care about our clients, which is why we've chosen the Cambridge model, because we kind of get involved in every corner of our client's life. So that's a little bit of... I joined, I left, I joined again, and now I can't even think about not being a part of it.
Thank you, Penny. Very helpful. Okay, I'd like to open it up to Q&A. Don't forget to hit *6 on your phone to unmute yourself if you did hit the mute code. Are there any questions out there? I know who's on. There's got to be a few.
Hi, this is Mary Carol Rose in Baltimore. Hi.
Hi, Mary Carol. Welcome.
Hi. Sorry, I was a little late. I do have one question. It's could both of you comment on specifically what are the tools and how you find those useful.
Want me to start?
Sure.
The tools are at, well, what's, there are tools that Cambridge develops. They're essentially Excel-based tools. They're very simple ways to do retirement analysis, very simple ways to do portfolio analysis, insurance analysis. There's a W-2 calculator that, you know, helps for tax planning. There's mortgage analyzers, loan calculators, saving calculators. Very, they're very easy to use. They're real simple. I personally find that clients really love them. My favorite tool is the retirement analyzer, which I use all the time. It's a real simple tool to use, but they're essentially very simple. But it's kind of supports our core philosophy, those tools. And then there's another level where, and actually we're working on this, and Judy's very important to this, is kind of partnerships that we're making with other third-party vendors. And that's the other level of tools. An easy example is MoneyGuide Pro. Cambridge has a relationship with them. We're trying to develop that relationship even further, that you can get a discounted price. Because you're part of Cambridge. So there's that level of tools. And then there's the tools that we don't have a relationship with, let's say like Morningstar Office. And yet there's, because there's so many people who use it, we have support groups, we have, you know, ways that we can work together and make you know, different pieces of it fit for the Cambridge model. So it's kind of three things. And then essentially we have a process, and I think that's really, really important. For instance, I actually work with somebody, he does wealth management, but he doesn't have the process that I have. In other words, I know what to do when somebody comes in. I know what kind of appointments to do. I know how to do, like, a recommendation or kind of the client summary meeting. It's very systematic. Now, I pretty much use most of the basic core tools because that's kind of how I was raised in this. The great thing, though, about Cambridge is it's not like McDonald's. You don't need to make the hamburger any special way. You can do whatever you want. I suspect Judy is probably much higher tech than I am and uses a different set of tools, but the process is there. And then we kind of give a basket of tools that you can use to support the process.
Yeah, this is Judy. I'd like to add to what Amy said. I do, part of my background is I had 10 or 12 years ago developed some Monte Carlo analysis software. So I do like certain aspects of some of the more technical programs that other people don't necessarily get into. But I use most of the Cambridge tools. And, you know, one thing, Penny was referring to them as simple. I don't think that they're simple. They're simple to use. They convey information well. But there is actually a lot to them. I mean, I kind of think of them as, if anybody's read, you know, Malcolm Caldwell's Blink, it's the salient information that's presented to the client in a very clear way. So, for example, the retirement analyzer, depending on a person's situation, I may go in depth and then also do Monte Carlo modeling for them with MoneyGuide Pro. And but a lot of times, meetings I had on Friday, for example, we were reviewing what we had done on the retirement analysis a year ago, and not much had changed. But the Cambridge Retirement Analyzer, those clients loved it because they get it. They get where their money's coming in. They get how it's going to be used. They get how it goes out. So I still use those a lot. I just happen to have a core group of engineer scientist clients who really want every number I can give them. So for them, I do go more in-depth. And again, I think the process is great. One of the other aspects of the process that I use a lot is that because we're doing tax planning throughout the year, it lets me be proactive in terms of seeing something that could be a benefit to one of my clients. I then contact them, and we take advantage of it. So I think that's part of what they're paying us for, is to be on the lookout for them for opportunities that come up. And I think the way the meeting structure is set up and that process is set up, it kind of gets you thinking that way pretty easily.
Yeah.
And thank you.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah, I think, just some perspective, it's very helpful there, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think for starting a practice, and again, because I worked for several different ones and then did try to start my own, that just being able to not waste all your time in admin and figuring out what tools to use, that takes a lot of time and it takes away from building your practice. So the fact that you can have kind of a turnkey system, if you will. I don't exactly know all that that implies, but I think not only saves you time, money, but it really gives you a solid platform to stand on right from the start. And then if you use that, maybe you see things you want to add later, but it truly, you won't need anything else other than that to start. It's only, I've been doing this, 11, 12 years, it's only in the last year that I've actually added anything beyond the core tools, and that's Morningstar Office. So you can do anything else. Hi, who is this?
Hi, Paul. Welcome.
Hi, this is Paul. Sorry, I'm a little late.
That's okay. You came in at a good time. We're on Q&A. And Penny and Judy just finished answering a question. So.
And we're ready for more.
Okay, can I chime in with one? This is Pat Sutherland of Bethesda. In terms of the structure of ACA itself, long-term in the network, I've looked at all the materials. And by the way, the lady from Baltimore, I believe her name is Mary. I recommend strongly that you look at the tools and what have you. If you can look at them in detail, you can learn a lot from just looking at them. But my question is, in terms of the network and how it's set up and where it might be several years from now, I like the interaction, and you throw a question out and you get lots of responses, and I looked at several of the responses, and I understood technically, and the answers seemed to made sense, the tax answers made sense. But my question is long term, in terms of the network, how is it set up? I didn't get enough from the website in terms of that area, and it can be addressed by anybody.
Network meaning people.
ACA organization or the long term. How is it set up in terms of long term? I mean, Bert's, bless his heart, may not live forever. So I'm just trying to get a feel for it.
Penny, I think you should take that one.
Yeah, I think this is right up my alley. I'm actually on the board, and this is a very big question that we're discussing. We're actually having a meeting in Denver in 2 weeks, and this is one of our primary questions, is the future of ACA and what we can do to support that future. I think really ACA has grown past Bert. It's not that he's not appreciated, and his ideas are fabulous. He's really thinks out of the box, and we're very thankful for him, but I do believe we can stand on our own. There's so many other strong participants. I think what we need to do to build that and is, you know, we're looking at, for instance, there's a lot of study groups set up within ACA that are a little more particular. Maybe they just want to use DFA funds, or maybe they're new and their whole focus is on marketing, or whatever the criteria is. So we're certainly trying to facilitate that more. We're very much trying to get our tech up to a higher standard so that we can grow with the organization. And we have reorganized our staff because we were still operating, you know, like 100 people. And now we're, I think, I'm not even exactly sure, let's say 160, 170. But we're trying to anticipate our growth. We think there's going to be a lot of growth. Things are starting to move pretty quickly. ACA is getting national recognition more and more and more. So that's bringing not only new clients to our members, but it's bringing new members because they're hearing about it more. So, I mean, your question is really kind of the key to what we as a board are trying to facilitate. And we're very aware of future needs, we're not concentrating on the ACA of today, but where it's going to be in 5 years and what we need to do to facilitate it. And honestly, we, 100% of us are strong in the belief that it's the network that makes ACA special. It's not the tools. It's that network of people that all have a common belief. And we will do whatever it takes to keep that network strong.
Okay. Could I do a follow-up on that? In terms of the network and the people in the network, how about the turnover of that and people's success and, you know, the succession planning and what have you for the various practices? Can you address any of those issues? Or I have some concerns in that area.
Yes. This past year, we did a very thorough, I believe, job with addressing succession planning and business planning. There's quite a bit of documents that have been posted on the website. We're currently developing a model so that, for instance, a planner like I am, who's trying to more ease out, can find a younger planner or newer planner that wants to, you know, get in or get more clients, a kind of a matching service. We are helping people not only build their practice, but sustain their practice and then end their practice with ways that they can sell it, things they need to do to sell it. We've arranged with he's not a business broker, David Goad. He's, though, very one of the industry's top brains on how to sell financial planning practices, and we have a contract with him. So what we've tried to do is help people from the very beginning to the end and everything in between. And these documents are extremely meaty. They're full of worksheets. And we have recordings and webinars, and I don't know that there's anything you wouldn't need in terms of succession planning and business planning that's not there. And it is something we're trying to get better at. It's in terms of, you know, for instance, there's someone in Florida, she wants to sell half her practice, so who would be a good candidate for that? Is there somebody out there that would like to work with her and take that? Those new clients.
Okay.
Does that answer that question?
As well as it's going to be. Thanks.
Any other questions? I know there's got to be a few.
Well, this is Steve, and actually I had just a couple of sort of practice management or technical questions for Judy. Judy, where do you meet your clients if you're officing out of your home?
I meet them in my home office.
Okay.
Me and my chocolate lab.
good. And you said you're getting near your max as far as number of clients. I'm curious what, in your mind, is that maximum number of clients?
Well, I let me explain. Numbers wise, I've been there. I actually hit this last year where I when I first started, if you had a pulse and a checkbook, that was good.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got a little more refined, and now I've gotten more refined, and so I've been in a study group with some folks, and we've encouraged each other to be more selective, and so my average client retainers now have gone up. So I signed a client last week for $8,000, and the one I signed in December was a $9,000 retainer client. So I'm not trying to get very many, but if I have between 30 and 40 is kind of where I am now, and I have some other things I'm doing, so I can't really take on more clients beyond that. But the clients are there. The prospective clients are there. So it's really nice because I'm able to be more selective, and I understand now which one, to me it was a learning process, and I think it was great. But I'm just more selective in how I'm adding clients. So for example, had a couple and the fees came out where the dollar value was in what I wanted, but I realized that the client's problems and issues were outside the areas that I want to specialize in, so I didn't take them.
Uh-huh, okay.
So, yeah, I took 2.5 months off last year, so I don't want to take on more clients than I can really service well.
Sure. And where are your new clients coming from?
Referrals. I've actually, one of my clients has an HSA advisor in California, or family members who have a Cambridge advisor in California, and they just called and said what we need, the NAP website and local searches.
Could I do a follow-up, Judy? If you were starting from scratch, you say now that you're going with the higher retainer clients, would you have not gone with whoever was live and had a checkbook and gone with the tighter initially, or would you have gone for the cash, still go with the cash flow of whoever was alive and had a checkbook?
I would still start with whoever had a checkbook.
Got it.
Because my first year was 2008. So, for me, the fall of 2008 was quite a challenging time, and I think it was, I had some that were bigger retainers than, I had a couple that first year that I think were $10,000 retainers, but I didn't have that many clients, so I had a lot of time, which was great to kind of figure out what exactly made the most sense. But I think there's just a certain amount of mistakes you make no matter what you're doing, and certain things that you may decide you like doing better than other things. I thought, for example, when I was starting, there was a target group of people that I thought I was going to enjoy working with, and it turns out after having a few of them, that's actually not, I don't like working with them so much. So I think the flexibility, figuring out what I really liked and who I work well with and who sees the value in what I'm doing, I think that's just a learning curve there, and it can either be steep or gradual depending on how hard you want to go at it.
Related follow-up, you mentioned use virtual assistants. Was it hard to get the virtual assistant working in your pattern? And I've never worked with that, but that's the plan I'm going toward.
I use one I had one in mind that I was working with, and then I actually had another one that someone recommended. That process has been really helpful. It's a question I constantly have to remind myself of how capable she is, and to go ahead and let her do stuff, because I tend to just want to do it myself, and then I'm busy doing stuff that isn't really the most efficient use of my time. And we took it slow. Like, I started with some very simple things at the beginning, having her call on Mondays, having her call my clients' appointments for the week, and just making sure that they knew when and where and what to bring. And then we kind of added more and more. And then we do checkpoint conversations every few weeks if I have some significant projects that I have her do, just to make sure she's doing it the way I want her doing it, and that I'm giving her the information in a way that works best for her. So it's been great. It's really been great. And it's been very affordable way to add, add more of a presence, especially since it is a home office. I think it's nice to have somebody doing the follow-up calls, and then when clients want to change calls, they all know her now, and we'll call her and get something set up and changed, and I don't really have to be involved in that.
Okay, thanks.
I'd like to add something to that. My assistant is in Chicago. I'm in Tucson, and we have a phone system that if you call my office, you just push 1 and you get her, and you push 2 and you get me. We have a virtual tunnel, and essentially our whole office can be virtual. And because I am in California a lot, I can work there as easily as I can in my office. Really, the whole virtual thing, I think more and more is going to become common, and it's really pretty easy to do with this system.
Okay. So the concept of setting it up and what have you is just not going to be that difficult.
Well, I mean, it obviously depends on who you get as your virtual assistant, but I think not. And actually, I think, Amy, maybe you know this, I believe Cambridge has a training course for virtual assistants.
Yes, we do.
So
Joy Orler, our training coordinator, has more of the specifics on it, but yes, we have a training course. The nice thing is, we can help you find a virtual assistant. We have people that have gone through the training class that you can hire, or if you have someone that's working in your office. My husband, Greg, who's been a member since 97, has done this with his secretary. For someone who's just starting out, you can put them through the admin training course, and it gives them the basics of all the core Cambridge concepts. And then we also have a paraplanner training course. So if you have someone who's working on a higher level than an admin, they're more of a paraplanner. Maybe it's somebody that's right out of college or right out of a CFP course, and they want to work for someone first. We have it's not expensive at all to put this paraplanner through a core Cambridge course, so that they understand all the concepts and can utilize all of the spreadsheets and forms.
This is Mary Carol. Could I ask a follow up on all that? Could
mm-hmm.
you comment on the price range to hire a virtual assistant and have it set up with that phone system that I think Penny just mentioned with the capability of pressing 1, you get the assistant, 2, you press the other, you get yourself. And could you also tell us how much it costs to train a paraplanner or put them through the Cambridge system training? Paraplanner.
You'll have to talk about the cost on the Cambridge training, but as far as, my assistant, I pay her $35 an hour. Now,
mm-hmm.
she used to be working here in my office, but then she moved to Chicago and got married about 7 years ago. And I have actually found, because I don't pay, she's an independent contractor, so I don't have payroll tax and I don't have benefits. And I definitely have saved money. Also, what I found is that, when she would sit in my office for 8 hours, she wasn't working all those 8 hours. And now she really works actually about 4 hours a day. So, I mean, obviously virtual has helped. Well, you know, we don't have filing and things like that anymore. So I pay her, I think last year, I paid her, I don't know, I want to say between $30,000 and $40,000.
Okay.
And I used to pay her more than that. My phone network is, but she works for other people too, so it works for her as well. My phone network is a system called Grasshopper.
Mm-hmm.
I pay it annually, and I can't tell you what I pay. I know that's terrible. Don't hold it against me. I don't know what I pay. I think it might be $500 or something like that. It's and it works great because the other gentleman in my office has it and his admin. So we have actually four people on ours, and we're all in different places. So that system works very nice. We share Outlook, so everything, again, comes in because I'm on a network and a tunnel. Everything, all the data is stored on the network, so we can have, as long as the software is loaded on our computers, it doesn't matter what location you are because the data is all in the clouds, whatever that means, Judy. But it works. I mean, it's just so easy. It's easier than it's ever been to have an office with people all over the place. I know there's a lot of people, like at tax time, that use people that, you know, get their tax returns ready and prep their returns, and many of the Cambridge advisors have virtual people doing that. Because it's seasonal, so they only really need somebody during that time.
So they just send them a PDF of the data scanned in, and then they populate the return? Is that what they're doing?
Well, in my case, we use Lacert and the e-organizers, which is what we mostly try to do, but there are some paper organizers, go back to my assistant. They don't come to me. She enters the data, and then it comes to me. So I think it depends on your software, but even with the way software works now, you can have something pointed to someone else. You know, as long as you're sharing the data on the same drive, it works pretty seamlessly.
I use Go to my PC. I have a virtual assistant for the admin stuff, and then I have someone else for tax. And so I use Go to my PC, and we have agreed times. We have set up times where she's going to be on the computer, actually doing them. So I use the organizers as much as possible. I use Drake. And then I will be scanning in this year. We're going to try and avoid the mail as much as possible, but scanning in all the forms that come in that people have, you know, the whatever the paper is. And
so
then
you're scanning in as opposed to her scanning it in.
Well, she's in California and I'm in Colorado, so
yeah, I got it.
I'm going to scan them in, and my clients, I have a couple remote clients, but most of my clients are in state, so I can give them back their originals, and then she can access it through Go to my PC. So that works really well. My virtual assistant, the admin that I use, she's actually $50 an hour, but she bills me in 10-minute increments. And when I first saw the $50 an hour quote, that sounded like a lot to me, and I wasn't sure how it was going to be. And then I had her do, I don't know what all, but it seemed like I had her do a number of different things, and at the end of the month, the bill came and it was $35. So since then, I've just felt it was so valuable, and it was great. I can get her a whole list of appointments I want her to get scheduled for me, or I can have her do a whole bunch of follow-up, and it just happens. I don't worry about it. And it's been real cost-effective.
As far as the cost to put an admin or paraplanner that's in your office through a training program, our admin program is $345. The Paraplanner Success Program is $7.95. And then we have a Paraplanner Plus Success Program. And that's for those staff members who fill both paraplanner and admin roles. And this combines the best of both, of the self-study and the virtual classroom. And the cost for that is $9.95. Any other questions?
I have one other. Mary Carol. I know that ACA has had an emphasis on tax work, so I'd like to know from Judy and Penny, looking forward, how do you differentiate yourself from accountants who, you know, as accountants move heavily into financial planning and also being quote-unquote full service? What's the difference between an ACA person and an accountant who's doing financial planning? Again, I put that in quotes. I've been in this for 25 years, so they did that. It's an interesting thing, but I'd like to hear moving forward into the world we're working in now, what about that and how ACA is different.
This is Judy. I'll take that one on because if you had told me 10 years ago I would be doing tax returns, I would have said you have no idea what you're talking about. And that was one of the things I was resistant to when I was looking at ACA. Part of it's a very selfish reason. Tax season is also ski season, and I really did not want to be bogged down with 14 and 16-hour days when the snow is here. But I was told to give it a try, and I agreed to give it a try. And there's two things I think that really help a lot. One is that getting people to stay with you, given that people have to do their taxes every year, or they have to get them done somehow, it is nice to have... It helps a little bit in making them want to keep coming back, if that makes sense. You know, they need that. They need their tax return, and you're going to do it. And so it's kind of a path of least resistance to keep going to the same person, I think. But a big part of it is that as we go through the process, like as I go through it with a client throughout the year, we're doing all sorts of tax planning aspects of their financial plan that really kind of come into play in various ways. I mean, the obvious ones are investments, right? You know, making people, you know, doing the Roth conversions or looking at their capital gains and losses. There's a lot more. You know, we do a lot. I have a lot of people with issues with state and stuff. So we're trying to optimize things that way. And so the fact that I know what's going on in their tax return because I did it actually helps. And then I have several people, you know, given their situations,
Can I interrupt you for 1 second? I think somebody is shuffling papers or something. Is anybody else hearing that? So I'm having a hard time hearing your answer.
Yeah.
Somebody might want to...
If everyone can just star 6 when you're not talking, that'll background noise.
Thanks. Sorry. I was having trouble hearing.
But the tax planning opportunities, you don't know when and where those are going to come up. And they end up just kind of coming up. And so the fact that you're already their go-to person for that, I've found it's helped me help my clients save a lot of money. I mean, that really surprised me, but it's actually come up a lot of different ways. So I don't think I'm ever going to love doing actually preparing the taxes, but I actually really like the tax planning aspects of it because it does come into everything we do from, like, their insurance reviews to all their real estate stuff to the investments and everything else. So that's where I've seen it has a real value. Penny, I don't know. You probably maybe have
I'd like to I personally, I think that really I totally understand your question. I know there are a lot of accountants getting into financial planning. I think where we add value is the way we do it. We look at the whole picture. We are much more financial planners than just looking at numbers. We are really trying to look ahead in people's lives. We're trying to, you know, is their kid having a problem in school? Is their marriage in trouble? There's all these issues, and it's never just let's enter all these numbers in a computer and out spits out a program or, you know, the glossy book that shows you what's going to happen in your life. It's really somebody that you have access to. And that access, you know, that people can email me or call me any time of the day or night, and they do, with a problem or something, and they don't have to pay by the hour for that. It's kind of like someone in your court, and I really think our method of doing it and just kind of looking at the whole picture of someone's life, do they want to lease a car, should they buy a car? Do they need to refinance their house? What's the better rate? These are things way beyond the general scope of an arrangement that someone has with an accountant. And I don't think there's any comparison. I know that people say there's a comparison, but and it's pretty easy for me to show people that, you know, if they want somebody really as a planner, that I'm the way to go versus a more formal arrangement that you typically find with an accountant.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
I also didn't want to do taxes and really dragged my feet with that. And I actually now like it because it's the only part of the year that I feel is black and white. There's
mm-hmm.
actually a rest to it for me. So I've really come full circle in that. But, you know, there's many Cambridge people who don't even do taxes. They
mm-hmm.
just hire that piece out. They do the tax planning, but they don't want to have anything to do with taxes.
Right.
And again, I think one nice thing with the Cambridge model is you can do all of it. You can do a part of it, whatever fits for you.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? There's got to be some.
This is Marty.
Hi, Marty.
And I have a chicken and egg question. You're just starting out. The front end fee associated with ACA can seem a bit formidable. So on one hand, I'm thinking, well, I try and get the ball rolling myself so that I've got some income. Okay, and then affiliate, or by affiliating, that'll help me generate the income. And any of you comment on that, please?
Yeah, I'll comment on that. This is Judy. I questioned that too when I was looking at the program, and the person that I met that really talked to me about ACA was someone who she tried to do it on her own, like you said, and then ended up joining a year later. And she, one of the things she said that really convinced me was that she felt that that saved her a year, that the fee that she paid, basically that was the year's worth of kind of learning and all that stuff. So it accelerated her business by a year. And that logic made sense to me, and so I signed, and I would agree completely now that I've been in it a couple of years. I really feel like it saved me at least a year. So because I know some other folks who I met at an early NAPFA conference who did go their own, and I got much further faster than they did.
I think a lot of it, too, is your financial situation. If you can afford to really just put your heart into it and go at it full blast, I think you'll, you know, obviously get results faster and be able to live on that as your sole support. But it does take a couple years typically to build. I think we have some statistics about that, but I'm not sure what they are. But, you know, if the reality of it is you may not be able to do it full time. Again, I do think, though, if you can, you should try. I know there's a banker in L.A., and that was a big question that he had. And he had, I think, a couple years of savings, and he decided, he was just going to go for it. And it's finally starting to work for him. But it's been like a year and a half, I'd say. Scary.
Are we open for another question?
Sure.
Okay. I'm on the cusp between Garrett and ACA, an hourly model versus the retainer model, network versus network. I am trying to get a feel if I'm a client and I on the other end. I know that hourly just felt more comfortable with me, but I've really been impressed with the ACA. Could you all contrast, or if you can, any knowledge you may have of either of the two networks, one versus the other? Why one would work versus the other. I think I can sell either one. I think I can make money with either one. But any feedback or insights between the compare and contrasting the two?
I can start with that. I think I'm really thankful for the Garrett planners. There's one particular here in town, because if there's somebody that calls me and I believe that it could be solved with just like an hour or two appointment, and it's not something that I want to take on, I will send them to him. Although I will tell you, and I think it's a very good organization for what it does, I'm more interested in relationship building. And I find that model would frustrate me. Also, you know, I don't have to work hard at marketing. It sounds like Judy's pretty quickly not going to be needing to work hard at marketing. There's a real rest in getting your practice built and just working with your existing clients. You know, you get to know them. You don't have to really work all that hard, and you make a pretty good living. And I think hourly, you're constantly having to bring people in the door. So that I think is a big difference. Now, sometimes, for instance, just the other day, I did a two-hour appointment for someone, and, you know, I could easily spring them into becoming a full retainer if that's the route that I thought they should go. And if they want to come back next year, like I actually do have a few clients that are on hourly, but I'm not limited to that. I can convert them to full retainers because the process is in place. So I like the fact that I can do both. But I do value the full retainer because I like the relationships. And I also like the fact that I don't have to market anymore, because I never really liked that part.
Yeah, this is Judy. I like getting to really be a part of the client's lives. And I have them now at this point. I've had some for the whole time I've been in business, and they call when something comes up, like a job change, or they're going to have another baby, or there's a new benefits package, or they have to move or something. And it's really nice to already have all the information, already know, and it's nice that they feel like that's so valuable to them that I'm there. So I think it's a really, I like having that base of people that I really do understand what's going on in their lives, and it's easy for me to add a lot to them, because we're optimizing everything financially all the time. And then as time permits, it's easy, I think, to add some financial reviews. I'm currently feeling too busy, and so I had to do a quick patch on the website saying I don't do these right now, but
like, for example, if it's in the summer, it seems like the retainer clients that I have, everybody's on vacation or we're in good shape or I don't know what, you know, and if I have time, then I can take that on. And then not take any more on if I don't feel like it. But it is nice to have the base. I think it probably comes down to where you see your practice, say, 5 to 7 years from now. You know, what is it you envision? Because that might really be it might steer you one way versus the other. So I had hoped to have a full practice in 5 years, and it looks like I'll be there either on or ahead of schedule or whatever. And it's there's always a lot to learn. There's a lot that you can optimize, but it's less stressful once you're not having to worry about the building aspect of it. So it may depend on what you know, if you like doing the hourly. I work with someone who still does a fair amount of hourly, and she's trying to get away from it because she feels she's got to perform at a higher level or something all the time, or she doesn't have the fallback position, I guess.
Okay.
If that makes sense.